Beware, spoilerphobes. You've stumbled upon A Storm of Spoilers, a podcast about HBO's Game of Thrones in conjunction with George R.R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series. Now that we're in the final season and well beyond the books, the podcast will include a spoiler section later in the episode that can expand to include any Game of Thrones relevant books, shows, internet extras, special features, teases, trailers, interviews, rumors, production spoilers, guesses, theories, and crackpotitude. We're not ruining, we're enriching. And if that isn't for you, feel free to jump off after the first section. After all, chaos isn't a pit, it's a ladder.
One of two things will happen. Either the dead will defeat the living, in which case all our troubles come to an end, or life will win out.
And what then? Don't fight in the north, or the south. Fight every battle, everywhere, always. Your mind. Everyone is your enemy. Everyone is your friend. Every possible series of events is happening all at once. Live that way. Nothing will surprise you. Everything that happens will be something that you've seen before.
Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I have not read any of the books in George R. R. Martin's A Song of Ice and Fire series.
My name is Joanna Robinson, and this is our last, like, not live recorded episode about Game of Thrones, right?
It is.
This is it. This is the last time I'm going to sit and stare off into space and talk to you guys about Game of Thrones into our microphone.
Yeah, otherwise you have to stare other people in the face.
A nightmare, truly. Sorry.
Faces everywhere. Everywhere you look, there's another face.
Speaking of other faces, sorry, who's the third person here?
And I'm Neil Miller, and I've read all the books in George R. R. Martin's The Song of Ice and Fire series. I've read all the books that do and ever will exist. I've also seen 72 episodes of Game of Thrones. All of them.
Whew. That is, yeah.
Guys, only a few more sleeps until it's all over.
It is, as we were promised, bittersweet. Just life in the final episode of Game of Thrones week. Guys, you're listening to Storm of Spoilers. This is the final week where we'll be splitting the show into two parts, a calm section and a storm section, because next week there will be no spoilers. We will know the entire thing. But just in case, look at your show notes if you don't want to be spoiled on our thoughts on what might happen in the final episode. Or maybe this is like your breaking point and you're just, you know, standing on the walls of King's Landing and you don't care anymore. And you'll just dive right into the storm this one time. This could be your week for it. The choice is yours. But before we move on,
okay,
this might be the last...
Gonna say that, like, I actually really advocate. I'm usually like, I'm okay, you're okay about the storm. Stay, keep your powder dry if you want to, whatever. But I will say that I really think being spoiled on this last week's episode really helped me just focus on the positive in it. And so, cause I wasn't like reeling from like various plot twists and turns. So of all the weeks that I would advocate you wander into the storm, this would be the week. Just maybe like mentally prepare yourself for what's coming so that you can then like when you're watching it, just be like, oh, Amelia Clark is doing something really cool with her face there. You know what I mean? And not worry about like the fells. What the fuck do the bells mean? What are the bells? I don't understand the bells sort of thing.
Well, we're going to try to talk about not understanding the bells, but yes, that's how the podcast works this week. Calm, storm. That will be the last time this podcast works this way in the public feed, but there are still two more weeks of Game of Thrones content left if you're a subscriber to our Patreon at patreon.com/stormofspoilers. If you subscribe at the highest level, the small council level, you get a Monday reaction pod. You get, of course, the Wednesday pod, because that's free for everybody. And then you get a Thursday question and answer pod. That's three times the podcasts if you join the small council. And if you guys are around, subscribe to this feed and are wondering why we're doing a Game of Thrones podcast, you're probably here because you heard somehow we're becoming The Storm, a Lost Rewatch podcast this week. That's right. Later in this same feed, this week, you will get our recap of the pilot part one and two of the ABC show Lost. We're going to do season one week by week through this September, we think. And well, you know, we're going to do week by week. We think that lasts till September, but our math is, you know, we're Euron levels of good at math. So
wait, no, I figured it out. It is September.
Okay, Neil.
It was my one bright spot of math this week.
Neil had a bright spot of math, and we know you can stick with us through September to rewatch season one of Lost. Those episodes will be split into Calm and Storm sections in case you haven't seen Lost and you don't want us talking about final season stuff while you're enjoying season one. That's maybe not fun for you. But if you're, of course, rewatching like the rest of us, we will have a Storm section that will take all of Lost into account. That's all the news I have to share. Joanna, you got any Storm of Spoilers news or reviews?
Wow, I definitely just totally forgot that we do reviews on the show. So I will speak. Actually, we got a bunch of foreign reviews. Foreign's a weird word. We got a bunch of reviews not from
international
America.
Reviews.
Mm-hmm. International reviews.
They've crossed over borders.
So I will read some of those, but and thank you guys so much. I know we read a bunch of negative reviews last week, and then you guys just sort of like bombed our iTunes page with a bunch of positive reviews. There's still some negative reviews that came in. Some people were like, they haven't suffered enough more. But a lot of you gave us a lot of nice 5-star reviews. So thank you so much for that. And then I will also just say that we have a live show that we're doing on Monday, May 20th in San Francisco. It is sold out. So I'm sorry if you did not get tickets for that.
Sold out.
It is sold out. I'm hopeful it will not be our last live show that we ever do. We love being on stage, actually. I think we do, right? We're good at it. I think we're pretty good at it. Anyway,
I personally don't love being in front of crowds, but I actually do like doing it with the two of you. So that's where I'm at personally.
Yeah, we have fun at Con of Thrones. We do a bunch, Con of Thrones in Nashville this summer. We will do a bunch we'll do a live podcast and we'll do a bunch of panels. They're all really fun. So come for that. But, otherwise we'll see the rest of you who got tickets for our live show in San Francisco for this, like, what I'm calling a group therapy session. We all hug it out, in San Francisco. Anyway, reviews times. We got a review from Australia that says, seriously, I love you guys. Rosanna May, 5 stars. This absurd level of minutia nitpicking is what I'm here for. I'm such a fan of you guys, and I really appreciate your thoughts, especially Joe. I've been a huge fan of your writing for ages. I spent a lot of time reconciling my love for this stuff with the writing/story choices. The HP adaptation was a real emotional training ground for the situation with Game of Thrones, but even more so because of how much less I'll stand for nonsense now. Seriously, keep up the good work. So. And that is Rosanna May from Australia holding the standards up. And then there was this one that we got from, hold on, let me find it. There's one we got from someone. Yeah. Okay. This is also Australian. Mel Shu from Australia, Riding Out the Storm, 5 stars. My husband introduced me to the podcast a few years ago in the off season tour. Because of the Hamilton episode, I immediately knew I'd found my people. Every week, I look forward to hanging out with my pod friends and hearing what they thought of the latest episode/pop culture thing. I enjoy that they are informed, articulate, and don't fawn over things or people just because they are popular or famous. The hosts, the right mix of brilliant and funny, and their banter and chemistry is part of the fun. I've been a Patreon subscriber for the last year and highly recommend it for the extra content and the Slack, which is like Twitter, but without the awful people. Thank you so much for all your hard work. I don't know what happens after the show, but I hope I can continue to enjoy your insights and the great community you guys have created. And then, okay, if you'll forgive me, I have one other review to read. This is an American review, but
it's the penultimate episode. Read as many as you like.
This review just like kind of blew my mind. It was great. This is from Mora. 5 stars. I watched Game of Thrones because of this podcast. I literally started watching Game of Thrones to enhance this podcast, not the other way around. When my husband and I started dating, he was already a Game of Thrones fan. I had never watched the show and didn't have much interest. He continued watching without me for years, but when I eventually moved in, I found out just how deep his fandom ran. Not only did he watch the show and read all the books, he listens to podcasts about it? Really? Then after hearing Storm of Spoilers for a few weeks in the background as I got ready in the mornings, I started actually asking him to put the podcast on. He was, of course, a bit confused. You like the podcast? You don't even know what they're talking about. You don't watch the show. I know, but I think they're really amusing was always my response. A few more weeks of this, I believe I listened to all of season 5 without watching the show. I asked him if he could watch from the beginning so that I better understand the podcast. We binge watched season 1-5. I started live with season 6 and the rest is history. We listened to Storm of Spoilers, Cast of Kings, and still watching religiously, read all of your articles, host Game of Thrones viewing parties, the whole nine. I even dressed our 3-month-old daughter as a little wolf onesie for last week's episode. My favorite part of My favorite part of watching the show is still musing over what Joanna will love and hate and what the boys will think of the week's polygons. When my predictions on your opinions are right, I'm very proud of myself. And when they're wrong, I always learn something or open my mind to a new perspective, which is the fun part. So if you were searching for the answer to the true eternal question, what fandom came first, the show or the podcast? My answer is this podcast. Thank you. I'm not crying. You're crying. Thank you for bringing me into the Game of Thrones family. I can't believe there are only two episodes left, but we'll keep listening as long as you keep talking. And we'll see you at the San Francisco live show to celebrate the final episode. Maura in San Francisco. So Maura and her husband, I am crying. We're really excited to see you guys there. We're excited to see all of you there. And we're excited to see all of you whenever we meet all of you. Maybe we need to do an Australia tour. Who knows? But anyway, thank you guys for your reviews. They really help us out. Thank you for burying those negative reviews. I appreciate it. And that's it for me.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good reminder right before we dive into this episode that Game of Thrones fandom is really great in a lot of ways. I mean, selfishly, this podcast. Neil, speaking of a podcast, every week you collect responses through your weekly poll in something we like to call Send a Raven. What do you have for us in the rookery this week?
Well, this one was a tough one. Tough one to come up with a good poll, a good multiple choice poll. So I left it wide open and just asked very simply what everyone, what's the one thing you want to see most in the series finale next week? And we got a bunch of fun answers, but I obviously want to hear what y'all think first. So let's start with Dave. Dave, what would you like to see next week above all else?
Robin Aaron! Yes, especially for our fantasy league purposes. We're part of a Cod of Thrones fantasy league.
We're winning that thing so hard.
Are we?
Yeah. Did we do well this week?
I don't know. I haven't looked to check this week, but I assume we're still winning.
I mean, I know we have Arya, so I know that we scored some, you know, stuff this week. But we have Robin Aaron and Edmure Tully in our fan draft, which were, you know, kind of joke polls early on at the beginning of the season. So if any of those pay off, but especially my boy Robin Aaron, you know, who was also has, you know, a familial history of madness. If he dodges that coin flip, you know, House Aaron, high as honor, stays in power of the Vale. Let's do it. Is the wheel really that broken? If one spoke is Robin Aaron of the Vale, probably not, but that sounds like a bittersweet ending. So I hope it happens.
Awesome. Joanna, tell us what you would like to see in the finale.
No, my request is very simple. All I want is for one single solitary character to have an emotional beat that I connect with that is rooted in both their character and their journey up until now. I feel like this is a very low bar.
So also Robin Aaron.
So Robin Aaron, please. No, what about that Dornish prince, maybe? I don't know.
The Dornish prince.
Ah, yes. All right, what do you want?
Well, mine's very simple. Mine is actually location-based. It's the one awesome legendary castle of Westeros that we have not seen. We've seen Old Town. We saw Castle Rock. We didn't really see Sunspear. We saw the Water Gardens, but whatever. But we've never seen Storm's End unless I missed something. And Storm's End, as described in the books, is super cool. And even if it's a crazy digital representation like they did with Highgarden, I would like to see Storm's End.
Some location of Storm's End? Highgarden?
Highgarden looked weird.
Yeah.
But I would like to see like one establishing shot of Storm's End.
You mean you want to see Gendry rowing up to Storm's End?
Yeah, or like just like an establishing shot, and then he's inside talking to whoever's left, maybe Davos's wife, something like that.
Mariah.
Whoever the hell's left of the Stormlight.
Mariah Seaworth. And she's like, I'm sorry, did you bring my husband with you? And he's like, oh, this is awkward.
Did you let him know that he has several more sons?
First of all, he's alive. I don't know if that's comforting to you at this point, but your husband's alive.
Oh my God,
yeah. So that's what I'm waiting for. As to our followers on the Twitter, we got a bunch of, a wide swath of responses, some of which were very angry with the showrunners, but you know, we'll get into that. A couple of very fun ones that I liked. I could not find who sent this, so I apologize in advance, but whoever said Tormund and Jon move into their apartment together, great one. That was my favorite. Another one from Pat, longtime listener, Pat, at Patman23. He said Jon Snow dying, but only because he's the only person left in his death pool.
Guys, I might miss Pat emails most of all.
Pat's just going to have to watch Lost.
Okay. Pat, please watch Lost and send emails. Pat's been sending emails to me about Game of Thrones since before this podcast existed. He is like an OG Cast of Kings listener. Love you, Pat. Thank you.
There are some inspired choices. One from at Time Traveler Matt. The answer to the question whether Arya's Catspaw dagger was really made from a remnant of the original Lightbringer, which I don't think the show is interested in this, but fun. A lot of folks, I think the tenor of this is that the folks who aren't just mad, about it are looking for some sort of montage at the end that really ties things up and sort of sets us off on new journeys, perhaps. So, that's sort of the theme. And then, yeah, there's a recurring one about Ned Stark waking up and it was all a dream. Mm-hmm. So, little Bob Newhart ending there. So,
I like it.
Lots of stuff from the old listeners. Thank you guys for everyone who sent in everything about Game of Thrones over the last several years. You guys are awesome.
Yeah. What a complex dream Ned Stark's been having.
Yeah.
Really violent one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. whatever reason.
Don't you usually wake up when you die in your dream? Like, isn't that usually like what wakes you up?
What do you think he ate to give him such weird dreams? Like, that's some like the lamprey pie, right? Like, that's
I'm sure there'd be George would have like 25 pages on just his one meal that caused the terrible dream.
Prologue. long list of food.
Oh, and then the other popular one is Samuel Tarly writing A Song of Ice and Fire and giving it a decent title.
Yeah. Shelving it in the Maesters thing, and we pull out and the gears turn and
And we're in the eye of a giant, the blue glass eye of a giant or something.
Oh yeah, go for the full-on Men in Black ending. We're in the eye of the giant, and the giant's playing marbles, and one of the marbles is the Earth. Of the Cylons.
I think you mean Planetos? Get it.
Planetos.
Right. No, because Planetos is in the eye of the giant, and then they're playing marbles with Earth. That's the Men in Black reference. I was mashing the two together. I know Westeros is a different planet, Joanna.
You guys are right. Jokes are funnier when you explain them.
You see, first I thought I knew what was happening, and then I didn't. But now I'm convinced I actually did know what was happening. Again. All right, you guys ready to actually talk about the episode?
Sure, why not? Let's do it.
Yeah, right after this word from our sponsors. Psych! No sponsors this week, all episode. Let's do it. All right, guys, start off with my man Varys. No. Let's not get directly into the episode. First of all, the discourse. Interesting episode this week. I had it out with my man Matt Patches, some on fighting in the war room, some off fighting in the war room because it was
I bet he had some good theories
that carried off about whether or not it's fair or how it's fair to criticize this episode. He went a little too far, I think, in talking about like us needing the full context of the show in order to criticize the climactic episode. I told him it wasn't a novel, but I think he did have an interesting point in that there's only so far that rewriting a show as a fan can take you because the show that you got is inexorably going to be the show unless they George Lucas remaster it sometime in the distant future. So I'm trying to... The second time I watched this episode, I tried to approach it at its own level and pick up all the little context clues and try to judge those on whether or not they made me feel good about the episode. They didn't, but I'm going to try to ask my incredibly knowledgeable co-hosts who have read the books and are very good at watching television about things in the episode that bothered me and if I took the correct interpretation from those scenes and if I misinterpreted those scenes and the building blocks are wrong. I think it's equally possible that I just watched the show wrong as it is, as it's actually bad. So I'm going to try to not draw a line in the sand here and say this was a bad episode, even though that's how I really feel. Going to try to be a critic about it. That being said, my two co-hosts are free to do whatever they want. Neil, how'd you like the episode?
Well, yeah, bad feels, I don't know. I've been struggling with this throughout the entire year where I'm convinced that these episodes are way too big to be any one thing. And that is extremely true here because, you know, I think there's some bad choices in it for sure. There's some bad choices throughout the entire season and that stem all the way back to, let's call it season 5. But I think that once you sort of get over the story points, once you sort of get past, the decisions that are happening, you can, on that second watch, I started to dig into a little bit more of the nuance of what really went into making this episode, which is just mind blowing in scale and scope and in how hard it was. And I think it's really a testament to what they've built. And we may not like all of the final bricks on top of this thing, but it's a really big, impressive thing that they've done. And it's taken, you watch the behind the scenes of this episode and they talk about how this was like Deb Riley, the production designer's, her basically pièce de résistance.
That's for what Deb I was Riley. Gonna say if you didn't say it. I was gonna be like, "Yes, there is this."
Literally building out.
Yeah, sorry, good.
So they literally built this set, in a parking lot. It's funny because my roommate Theo, who you guys know, went to Belfast last year at some point, and he took a picture of the finished or the blown out part of the front gate. And we had spent a long time looking at it. I don't know exactly what that is, but obviously I know what happened there. So it's kind of fun to go back and be like, yeah, man, that was crazy set that they built. I think there's a lot to appreciate about what they've done here. I think the ultimate problem that they're running into, and this is not a new problem for the showrunners and the writer's room, is that they're in a hurry to get this done. And they've been in a hurry to get this done for a while. And they've shaved some stuff off. They've made some changes. They've rubbed away some of the nuance that George so very carefully crafted. And, it sort of is what it is at this point. I think that it's still possible for them to stick some of the landing, but, it's just very rushed. And this episode, even though it's very impressive, there's just a lot of stuff in it where you're just like, oh man, why? Why'd you keep doing this? So, but I don't know. I think I liked it better the second time around because I was just sort of watching the performances and watching the special effects and watching all the polygons. And I was like, holy shit. This is crazy. This is Saving Private Ryan with dragons. This is the most insane thing I've ever seen in a television show. It's also just very grim, which sort of feels on brand for Game of Thrones. Very grim.
I think it's a little bit of nice balancing out in the sense that when people talk about the final season of Game of Thrones, they're probably not going to talk about one episode being too dark. It's that part of the conversation sort of, I don't know. First of all, it seems unimportant now. And second, the team stepped up and delivered one of the most beautiful episodes of Game of Thrones ever.
Yeah. One more thing I have to say, and then we can move on, I guess. Somebody made a good point to me today that was, some of the problems that we've been talking about in season 8. It's very easy to jump in to season 8 and be like, this show has all of these problems, and miss the fact that some of us have been working through these problems for years with the show. And so we have a slight, I think that's helpful in the way that we've gone about it. Because it's easier to sort of wrap your mind around where they've ended up if you understand the mistakes they've made along the way. And I think that's sort of an important context. I think that there's a very loud reaction to Game of Thrones season 8. And, it means different things to different people, but I think there's a level of engagement that is helpful in yeah, maybe seeing the bigger picture.
Yeah. Joanna, let's see, series specific, I think Neil's right, but show, for the remainder of the show, is there like a shorthand we could make up or coin for every time we want to say, if they had like another season's worth of episodes, I would have expected this?
Well, what I think is remarkably great. I was trying to figure out when Neil coined efficiency is coming. Was it season
it was when
five?
It was when we first met the Night King. So Oathbreaker? Holy shit, how did I just... Maybe. That might not be
no,
right.
No, I don't think that's quite...
I think that's the name of our episode for whatever week that
was. Oh, okay.
Was.
Let's
or
go
Oath
find
Keeper,
it.
Or whatever
let's,
the...
Let's go find it, because it was that... The fact that we have been talking about efficiency is coming, which mm-hmm. is both funny and just, like, so prescient in terms of, like, not only is efficiency... Did efficiency come, but, like... I mean, it got way worse than efficiency, right? It's like right.
It's distillation
corners,
at this point. Like they've distilled things down.
But years we've been sort of like, okay, this is getting faster. And I feel like a lot of other people are on that train this season, a bit last season too, but like this season, and really everyone's like, why the rush? And we were like, why the rush years ago? You know what I mean? And so, we're
like, why are you rushing season six?
So that being said, you know, as Neil alluded to, like we've been sort of bracing for some of this stuff for a long time. So it's maybe less of a shock to us because we were already like, this is too fast. But I think I would disagree with Neil in that I feel the same way when I watch like the making of and I'm like, oh shit, Deb Riley rules. Oh shit, Sam Conway rules. Oh shit. You know, like all the like behind the scenes people who like blow shit up or build entire cities or light people on fire. But at the same time, like, so Kim Renfro and I, because we're crazy people at like 1 a.m. or 2 a.m. I don't know. Kim didn't sleep on Sunday. I fell asleep at like 4 a.m., but we were like watching the making of and like sort of texting each other. And the like stunts guy comes out who I love and he's just sort of like, this time we set a record for this week. And we're like, we get it. You set people on fire. Okay. But that's not like, why is that what this show has become? You know what I mean? Like, it's just, yes, this episode looked good. Yes. When you have the Neil settings on your TV, the long night looks great. Like it looks incredible. But like when you think about the amount of resources and energy they devoted to the Battle of Winterfell and how in the long run, how little that is going to feel like it matters compared to like, Kiss by Fire or The Door or a number of other things, another, you know, The Children or like a number of other episodes that feel like they matter so much. The Red Wedding, for fuck's sake, that they matter so much more on a lower budget in a more intimate setting. And I've been saying this for years as well, and I still feel it like, yeah, the spectacle is impressive, but it's the wrong thing for them to be focusing on it. And they focused their resources on that at the expense of character, at the expense of writing. And so, like, even if you had 13 episodes left that you self-imposed on yourself as Weiss and Benioff, the fact that you got, like, sort of high on your own supply about the idea that, like, people, Nico agrees with me, that, like, people care most of all about Battle of the Bastards, and they care most of all about Beyond the Wall, and they care most of all, you know, it's like about Spoils of War. And I'm just like, it's like that Jurassic Park quote, you know, like, you know, you were so worried about whether or not you could, you didn't think about whether or not you should. That's not how the quote goes. But anyway, like, you know, it's just like, just because you can get all those polygons in a row, is that really what we needed here at the end of it all? You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, well, and I think that's really the part that feels that we, you know, when the efficiency arrived, we lost the nuance. We lost the, Nico's very worried about this, by the way. She's very distressed.
So what she's trying to tell you is that Efficiency is Coming was the title of our episode for season 5, episode 1.
Season 5, episode 1, eh?
Wow. Yep.
Efficiency is Coming.
Well, and I think it's interesting because, you know, the end of, obviously, the first 4 seasons of Game of Thrones will be defined by it being a very good adaptation of what George wrote. And the final seasons are going to be sort of this weird mix of being driven by the showrunners falling in love with the spectacle, but also the cast really sort of puts it on in these last couple seasons, and the performances are really good. And you almost, it's hard not to wonder if they had been more patient and if they could convince everyone to do 80 episodes or 90 episodes or whatever, what could have been. And I think that's where people fall into the trap of trying to rewrite the show, or, you know, there's always going to be, it's going to be a great what if forever with Game of Thrones.
Yeah. And I don't like rewriting the show too much, though. Do you want to hear this great thing that I heard from another Game of Thrones writer, that they told me earlier, someone who covers Game of Thrones. And I don't want to say unless they would rather not, but like, please don't think I'm robbing them of their credit. If they say this on their podcast later this week that a lot of people listen to, I will retroactively give them credit for having said this, which is, okay, Rhaegal dying in episode 4 felt so stupid and meaningless, right?
Yes.
It felt very abrupt.
Yes.
What if Daenerys attacks King's Landing with 2 dragons? She hears the bells. She's paused. She's ready to, like, lay down. And then a remaining scorpion gets her last dragon. That's not Drogon. Like, Rhaegal dies.
Right. Rhaegal dies in the battle.
Yeah. And her second child dies, and that's the moment where she's like, oh, this bitch has taken everything from me. I'm going to go ham, you know? And then she goes. Rather than whatever it was she was reacting. Like, I needed some sort, like, and that solves the problem. Once again, this is all credit to this person who brought this, planted this seed in my mind. It solves the problem of, like, Rhaegal's death feeling like it doesn't matter, and Daenerys' reaction in episode 5 feeling like we don't have all the connective tissue to get her there. So,
I mean, wouldn't it have to be like the Lannister soldiers have all surrendered, and like a peasant gets freaked out and turns the scorpion on the? Because it has to be something that makes her turn on the populace. Well, I mean, maybe she just goes crazy because her child dies. That is more understandable. But anyway,
I mean, we'll get to that part of the episode, I'm sure. Preferably, it would be like the Lannister soldiers lay down their arms, and then, yeah, the peasants all start flipping her off and are like, we prefer Cersei. And she's like, you ungrateful pieces of shit, and torches them. Yes.
Or just, we're scared of dragons, which is very,
we'll never accept you or something. You know, if she could, from her perch a mile high in the air or whatever, could look down and somehow see that, like, even though she's technically one, those people of King's Landing will never love her the way that the Misa people did. Misa people's not their name, but you know what I mean.
People of Dragon's Bay, or whatever it's called now.
Yeah, not the artist formerly known
the
as
Bay of Dragons.
Bay. Anyway, yeah, but that all aside, ultimately you're completely right, Neil, that it's sort of folly to try to rewrite the show. And I also agree with you that the performances are so incredible. Like, Amelia is so good. I think Maisie's really good in this episode. Some of the best stuff we've seen from her in a while. I think Nikolai and Lena are really good in this episode. Like, they're, you know, I think Peter Dinklage is incredibly good in that goodbye scene with Jamie. There's just, like, it's frustrating to try to latch onto those performances through the layers of, like, you know, Gwendolyn Christie was amazing in the goodbye scene to Jamie, but, like, you're sitting there being like, it's hard for me to focus on this incredible performance when the logic is so hard to connect with in the rapidity with which this decision is happening. So I think that's just me agreeing with you. I think that's all.
Yeah, I mean, that all makes sense. And, you know, I think the problem, or I guess, so the Dany thing, I want to do this now.
Okay.
I understand the logic. Like, I understand why we got here, and I also pretty much believe that George is going in the same direction with this.
I agree.
But you're right, the order is weird, and it all feels like it just sort of bubbles up right at the end there, and then she snaps. And, you know, I think it's funny, like, watching that scene a second time, knowing what's about to happen, you really do appreciate that she's, as Joanna explained on the Monday pod yesterday, like, she's just sitting on a green rig in the middle of a green room. And she has to, sort of carry this emotion and this emotion of looking at the Red Keep as this iconic thing that was taken away from her family that her ancestors built, and then all the other shit that Cersei has taken away from her, and that this, the things that she has had to endure are incredible. And I get it. Eventually, maybe you just want to light the world on fire, because Daenerys' life has been extremely hard. But the way that, you know, we always talk about the execution mattering, and usually we say that in the context of, we knew that the Red Wedding was going to happen, and what mattered was they executed it properly, and it just was awesome. We knew this was going to happen, like Daenerys' basically fall from grace. Like, we had a good idea that this was one of her outcome, potential outcomes, but the way they executed it made it feel very weirdly hollow. And I'm not 100% sure that it's ruined. We obviously still have a whole other episode, but I can see why people are mad, but I can also see why it ended here for Daenerys, or why she arrived here, which I think is credit to the what they've done up to this point, which I guess makes it more frustrating. Because it's like, you guys did a really great job of keeping the focus on how the Targaryens were not all right. Like, they weren't all good people. You know, like Aegon and his sisters, they didn't build the New World because they were nice people. You know, they conquered Westeros because they had dragons. Targaryens are dangerous people. Or the Targaryen magic power is a dangerous power, I think, is more the appropriate way to say that. So, but yeah, to have it sort of all come to a head from the halfway point of one episode to the end of the next episode is just kind of a dumb choice. Well, that's just what it is. It's dumb. They could have done this over the course of a whole season, or the back half of a season, and maybe it would feel better.
I'm going to paraphrase friend of the pod, Lindsay Romaine, who had tweeted something like, foreshadowing and character development aren't the same. And I think it's like the gap between those two things that wasn't crossed. Even if you go back and look at the series as a whole, like, definitely there's a debate on whether or not she should have, like, burned the Tarleys, and she brought, you know, that was emphasized even earlier on this season with, just through Sam's perspective, so we wouldn't maybe think about it as pointedly and not spoil the big turning point moment. And then obviously in the previously on, they went through and took every line that somebody had said about maybe Targaryens are crazy and piled them on top of her breaking look. And so I definitely think that the context is there for it happening. The disconnect for me is that we had like a great Jaime arc where he got to say goodbye to everybody, in the case of Tyrion, three times. And we had a great Brienne arc and like a Gendry arc that was amazing out of nowhere. But then for these other characters, like your Jorahs or your, you know, Missandei's, they have to die. And it's weird to me that we get Tyrion and Jaime saying goodbye for a third time, and because we're supposed to be caught up in that emotion, gloss over the fact that Tyrion has a way to sneak into the Red Keep.
Only does he have a way to sneak, like, that was a viral tweet that I saw, that I don't know if, like, Tyrion has a way to sneak into the Red Keep, and they've got one of the world's best assassins on their team. The end.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
Right.
So, like, I understand
what the Hound says to that soldier is kind of what they should have tried.
They've got an assassin who can wear the face of anyone ever. Like, I'm not salty that, like, my theory of what Arya is doing in King's Landing was wrong. I don't give a care. Like, I don't care. I do care that, like,
the people on this war show are bad at war.
Yeah, they're like, but then they're supposed to be like good at war. Like, no one has ever really fully like, Tyrion, all your ideas are bad and you should feel bad. Like, Dany says it sometimes, and whenever she says it, she's fucking right, man. Anyway, Tyrion, you're bad. Your ideas are bad. I can't believe you knew a secret way to get into the Red Keep, and you have an assassin who literally just took out, like, the god of death, and you didn't think of sending her after Cersei. What the fuck? All right, wait, something I want to say about everything you guys were saying. Well, here are, I think, three approaches to coping with the Daenerys thing. There's people who, you know, and a lot, and some of this is like book reader, show watcher divide, but not a clean divide. But there's like people who say they saw it coming and are completely fine with it. There are people who say they saw it coming and they still don't like how it was executed. And then there are people who didn't see it coming and are just like in total shell shock. And then a subgroup of the people who didn't see it coming and are in total shell shock are the people who, like, for whom Daenerys was this very important emotional, you know, fictional, representation of triumph over abuse and stuff like that. You know, so for whom there's an added layer of emotional, stuff. Daenerys was never that for me, so I don't have that emotion attached to her, though I certainly have had it for other people. And so I understand it. But what I think is important of all of those reactions, and I think all of them are valid, is that, and this is my very like kumbaya stance I'm taking as into the final couple weeks of Game of Thrones, is that nobody tried to make someone who didn't have the same experience they did on the Daenerys thing feel bad about their take. You know what I mean? Like, if you saw it coming and you're fine with it, that's fine. If you saw it coming and you're not fine with it, that's fine. If you didn't see it coming and you're not fine with it, or maybe if you didn't see it coming and you are fine, whatever it is, that's fine. What I would ask is please don't tell someone they're stupid if they didn't see it coming. I think that's extremely rude. And please don't tell someone that they shouldn't be emotional over something that happened to a fictional character that they've invested too much into. Because I feel like a lot of us do that. We care about the show because we're emotionally invested in the show. And so it's more personal for some people than others. And that's okay. You know, so I'm just sitting here in California telling you I'm okay. You're okay. Like, let's all just enjoy our, you know, like, I think it's okay for the three of us or anyone to say like, oh yeah, I did see it coming. And these are some of the things that I saw. You know, mm-hmm. like Neil and I wrote posts about this in 2016. Book readers have been talking about it for like a fucking decade. Like it's a thing that people have been talking about. But to say you're dumb that you didn't see it coming is like, it's silly because people are engaging in this fandom and in this content with much varying degrees of, you know, like paying attention to detail or life experience or whatever it is. And it's all okay. Is my point.
Yeah, not all of us can get so lucky as to stan Tormund, who still lives, by the way. No,
that feels like rubbing the salt in the wound.
No, you're right.
Littlefinger.
I have an episode-based question. I know we're supposed to think the bells is when it's happened, but don't all of our context clues, like how she's dressed, look like how her brother, like how she's already like knows everybody's turned against her, like how she executes Varys and has already like targeted Jon Snow. Doesn't it seem like she's like made the decision that, or like half a decision that she's thinking about just burning King's Landing by the time the episode starts?
I think the show wants us. This is weird to get into their intent, but let's do it anyway. The show wanted us to sort of believe that that there's basically two breaking points in my mind. One is the moment she turns around after Missandei is executed and we sort of see her face. So that's like fall number one. And then fall number two is when, at least as far as I can interpret based on what they said in the behind the scenes, when she's sitting on the wall in King's Landing, she realizes that she won.
Yeah.
Because she can hear the bells.
But it feels empty.
It doesn't feel right. You know, I mean, and you can get inside that headspace and it makes sense. The thing about this Daenerys thing is that even if we didn't see it coming, it's not without a certain logic. It's just sort of the way it falls together. The way it falls together on the surface is weird. But you know, I get the idea that like she wins, she knows she's won, but then she's sitting there and it's like, this doesn't feel right. And I think that is also a big theme that this story has been telling for a long time, which is, you know, not all great, you know, not all of these heroic stories are built, are, you know, sunshine and roses. This is terrible. This is war. This costs people. And the people that pay the most are the people at the very bottom on the streets, which is one of the things I liked about this episode, the resetting of perspective that they did. Which I think we actually talked about last week is like something that we missed in the Battle of Winterfell, which was like what's happening to the small folk. And
they did a good job with here, right?
Great job with that here. And so I think you can kind of get in there and see what they were going for, you know, and then you can see that Emilia's trying to do it and she's really doing it. It's just, there's still something missing. I guess there's something missing from our victory as well, you know, in this. It's like, we were right, but it doesn't feel right.
Yeah, a Pyrrhic victory, if you will. I would yes and your take and say I think there are three breaking points.
One is it? Did my guy Tormund do the first one?
Well, four. I mean, four. I mean, you know, like Jorah dying is a thing.
Sure.
Missandei dying is a thing. Jon rejecting her romantically
huge thing.
And then the bells. And so, like, I agree with you, Dave, that like, when she's sitting on the salt throne, the whatever the Dragonstone throne is called. when she's sitting on that throne and Tyrion's like, this is okay. Quick diversion to talk about.
This was the moment in the episode we all groaned because they realized they were going to do it.
we all read the leaks or whatever. And we knew, and in the leaks, they're like, then the bells happen and she snaps. And we're like, this is obvious. What the fuck is this? Because what bells? What bells matter?
Yeah, why would bells?
What are you talking about?
Snap anybody.
And then, like, there's a meme that's floating around, but, like, it's just also true that, like, then Tyrion says the word bells, like, 9 times in a row, and we're all of us who are spoiled are sitting at home going, like, oh, they're doing the bells. Okay,
oh,
anyway.
Oh, no, the bells thing.
Oh, the bells do matter. So Tyrion's sitting there, he's like, the bells, the bells, the bells. And she, like, he's like, will you call it off? And she looks at Grey Worm, and she gives him a look that's like...
No fucking way.
I feel like she gives him a look like... Maybe. And he's like, okay. Cause I feel like also, cause I was talking to Kim about this, like how, I was like, is this a plan that she and Grey Worm have from the start? Or, you know, like we were never going to stop, or is this something designed in the moment? And it seems to me rewatching Jacob Anderson's performance as Grey Worm over and over again, that he's like, kind of like, I thought it might go this way. It wasn't a pre-planned thing, but I thought it might go this way. And I was just waiting for, like,
just flip the switch.
My permission to just do what the fuck I want to do, which is fuck shit up. You know, so I don't think it was like entirely premeditated, but it was like, and I think especially Emilia's performance, I think is really supposed to show us that she's making a decision there.
I keep coming back to the end of the Battle of the Bastards and the moment where Jon Snow burst through the Winterfell gates and he takes on Ramsay, knocks him down. He starts punching him and he just keeps punching him. And then what stops him is he sees Sansa. He, you know, remembers himself for a second. And so the show is all about this sort of the fog of war creates monsters and. In order for a hero to not become a monster, they have to have something anchoring them. So the difference to me in this scene with Daenerys versus that scene with Jon is Jon's there. He's going to pound Ramsay's face into dirt until he sees Sansa and he remembers this is a bigger thing. And he's sort of re-anchored. With Daenerys, there's no one left to anchor her. Yeah. She believes that everyone has turned on her. Yeah. The difference is she's sitting on a nuclear weapon and there's no one there to stop her. And this is sort of what happens. And I think we've spent a lot of time believing that there's something else to, I don't know. I don't know if I ever felt this, to be honest with you, believing that there was more to Daenerys than this. Or, you know, I kind of always believed that it would be Jon falling in love with her and them together breaking the wheel and together sort of breaking out of the system. But as soon as that storyline went sideways, I was like, okay, well, there's only one option left in my mind for Daenerys and her quest to, it's the big question that is unsolvable in life, I guess, is how do you eliminate tyranny if you are a tyrant, if you are a person who sits on a dragon and roasts people, regardless if they're your enemies or they're small folk or they're whatever. That much power is not good for any one person to have. And I think maybe that's the lesson we're about to, maybe that's the message the show's going to give us here in this last episode. At least I kind of hope so, which is if this is a meditation on singular power, I get it. But also I get people being very frustrated, or being, you know, emotionally traumatized essentially by Daenerys's turn, because she's a character we've liked. You know, I mean, I keep the thing that keeps showing on my Twitter feed is that clip of Emilia Clarke on the like sort of gritting her teeth when they ask her what she feels about the end. Oh, and it's like, I get that too. You know, she probably loves Daenerys as a character just as much, if not more, than anyone else. And this had to be hard. But I think that there's something to it. There's a message they're trying to deliver. The show's very clunky in doing it. George, in theory, would potentially do it better, but you know, who knows? So I just think that that's what I keep coming back to, is like, there's just no one there to stop her, and she's the most powerful person in the world at that point.
Something that, like a couple things, and sorry, Dave, I don't mean to like, if we're leaving you out or whatever, but like, she, Emilia Clarke also said to me in like the, when I was interviewing her, for a cover story, she said like, it fucked me up thinking that this is the like lasting taste that people have in their mouth about Daenerys. And I didn't know what she was talking about when she said it, though I should have known. She also told me, and I don't know that I wrote about this, but she also told me that she like had to keep a journal every day. She's like, you'll see what I mean, to like process her journey and stuff like that. This is the thing that she did this season. And then she was just like, so it's so hard for her to separate herself from Daenerys at this point, because like she started playing this part when she was a kid, and she's just sort of like, I am Daenerys. And so I think like for her, it's just really challenging to have this happen to Daenerys. Is hard for her as well, would be my guess. I mean, I don't want to lay too much on her, but that would be my guess. And then the other thing is like this idea of an empty victory. I think a lot about Robert Baratheon. You know, like I've been talking a lot this week about Stannis's fall versus Daenerys's fall. But another person to think about is Robert Baratheon, who like did all this stuff to conquer, to take the Iron Throne from the Targaryens, to conquer the Seven Kingdoms. All because, you know, as Tyrion said, I think, whatever, like all because, you know, someone he loved wouldn't love him back or whatever. But he wins. And then what is Robert's life after that win? It's awful. Right? He's married to Cersei.
It ends horribly.
He's married to Cersei. He doesn't love her. He's just sort of like anesthetizing himself for the rest of his life with like, you know, prostitutes and drinking. And so it's like, that's an empty victory for like Robert raged through that rebellion. That was through wounded romantic feelings that he raged through that rebellion. And then he got his throne. And then what? And I really feel like when I heard that behind the scenes interview, it was with, I think it was Miguel Sapochnik who said that description of Daenerys, which is like, she wins this battle. It's not what she thought it was going to be. And she was all alone. And like, not to get too personal, but like, I will get personal. I don't know. This is my podcast. the day that my Marvel cover story for Vanity Fair came out was one of the worst days of my life, because I worked so hard to get somewhere. And then I was like, wait, is this it? Oh. I was like, this isn't maybe what I thought it was going
to
be.
Oh, shit. I still have to go to the store.
Like, yeah, your reward is you're not working anymore.
Your reward is tomorrow's another next day. Thing. Yeah. And so it's just sort of like, it can be really, like, I don't know if that sounds awful, but it can be really weird and disorienting to get something that you've been working at for a very long time. And then you go like, oh, is this feeling enough for all the things that I sacrificed to get here? I don't know. And for Daenerys, the answer is clearly no. Like, she feels so all alone in that moment. Once again, I think it is completely ridiculously unfast forward, but you know,
star efficiency is coming. Yeah. Footnote.
All right, Dave, will you talk for a while, because I feel like I would like to hear more from you.
Well, I mean, I have some questions that might mean I'm dumb, but we're going to go through them. Here we go. Is Varys trying to poison Daenerys at the beginning? Is that why she's not eating?
No.
I think it is.
Not
that that's why she's not eating, but it didn't occur to me until someone else pointed it out. But, like, he says to his little bird, like, we'll try again at dinner. Like, you know, at first I thought he was just monitoring her food intake. But then he was like, she's in the kitchen, and he's like, okay, don't worry, we'll try again. Someone also mentioned that maybe his rings were where he was, like, keeping some poison, and that's why he took them off when the guards came for him. But yeah, I think he was. I think he was.
Wow. I read that scene totally different. Which I actually like this version better, because in my mind, the only reason we have this scene, obviously there's, you know, to show him writing his treason down. But also, we've actually never, as far as I can remember, we've never really seen him interact with any of his little birds. We saw Qyburn do it, saw Maester Pycelle interact with them. We've never seen the way Varys was with his little birds, and I feel like this is another one of those, like, too late things. So I'm gonna go with your interpretation that he was trying to poison her, and maybe he did poison her, and maybe that's part of what sort of set this whole thing off. I don't know. Maybe that's too far. That's probably too far. Too much of a stretch.
Well, I mean, you could open up interpretations like to mine that is also why she's not eating, because, like, yeah, she's mourning, but I think she's really
also super suspicious of everyone around her.
Exactly. Just, like, that's part of the paranoia of her family's madness,
but, like,
that would play off.
She's paranoid and she's right. You know what I mean? When she says that shit about Sansa, you know, I'm just like, but also she's right. Like, if Sansa, like, you know, I don't like that it's between two women or whatever, but, like, if Sansa hadn't been, like, pushing the way things she was pushing, would Daenerys have wound up here?
That's going to be a big question. I mean, because it was funny, going into this episode, I would have said Sansa was right so far. But I think they're both kind of right in their own way.
I think...
That leads to my second question. Did Sansa tell Tyrion, knowing the full scope of her actions?
No.
The full scope? No.
I think Sansa's just moving. I don't think Sansa. I know that.
You don't think she's fighting all wars all the time?
I know that Arya is indeed Arya says Sansa is indeed the smartest person she's ever met. And Sansa is very smart, but she's not, like, clairvoyant. Well, she is Bran, so maybe she is. But, you know, I think she's pushing the pieces where I think she is pushing Tyrion, knowing that he will do certain things. I think she has Tyrion's read perfectly. She has his number. Absolutely. But, does she know exactly how Daenerys will react to that? Does she know Daenerys is about to torch all of King's Landing in response? No, I don't think. You know what I mean? Like, yes, to a certain degree.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I guess my question was her telling Tyrion specifically a way to move Daenerys's biggest threat to somebody, like, right next to her?
I'm sorry. Can you say that again in a way that I understand?
So, like, Daenerys says, she told you, she knew you'd tell Varys, et cetera, et cetera. Did she know that basically just by telling Tyrion, she sets off basically the pro-John party within her own thing? Or did she just need to tell Tyrion because she respects Tyrion and Tyrion might know what to do?
I think there's I have an idea.
I think it's the former. I think that Tyrion is she's trying to knock out Daenerys' ally. And she does it by dangling this other prospect in front of Tyrion. Does she know Tyrion is going to tell Varys? No, but she probably could have seen that coming. And then Varys, by the way, is like, oh, now it's just information. So it's like, fuck. But yeah, I think Sansa's trying to win Tyrion over to her side, and she's been working him that way since he got to Winterfell. What is your idea, Neil?
I think that I don't think Sansa's dumb, so I think she probably understands the potential ramifications of what she's doing in that moment. But I also do think that she's very right to be worried about Daenerys at that point, because we've already been through, obviously, the feast where, you know, and she's very observant. She gave Dany a lot of looks. But also the War Council meeting I thought was very important when Sansa's like, yeah, you guys shouldn't go to war with like a half an army, and you should maybe wait and like figure this out first. She stopped just short of saying sending some scouts. So I think
we miss you scouts on this show.
So by the time she has this conversation with Tyrion, she has good reason to be a little worried about the dynamic between Jon and Dany. And she, her worry the whole time with Daenerys was that she was leading Jon down the wrong path, that Jon would do something stupid because he loved Daenerys. And then Jon did something stupid because he loved Daenerys. He essentially relinquished his claim. You know, he relinquished his claim. He said, I don't want it, but I still need to tell the people who can't keep secrets in my family. So yeah, she has every right to be worried about Daenerys, and she does set off the chain of events. I don't want to ascribe, too much to it, whereas like she knew all this would happen, but I think she had a good feeling that something was going to go wrong, and telling Tyrion was sort of the only thing she sort of had left.
The most altruistic interpretation I have of what Sansa's doing in that moment is that, like, all the men in her family go to King's Landing to die, right?
Sure. Yeah, she's got all kinds of baggage about this whole thing.
Yeah, so, like, she's protective of Jon, and that's important to her. And that's, I think, a lot of what Sophie Turner is playing. You know, that's the text of the script. She's playing that. But, it feels like a slow motion disaster watching it and just being like, you know, if Daenerys had just let the North be independent, and then if Sansa had just been like a little bit more receptive to Daenerys, then you see how they almost reach a detente in that scene. And like, it's just so close to not being a disaster, and then it becomes a disaster. And that feels very Thronesy, you know, in its own way. So, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Thrones is, you think about the small, what feel like small decisions, you know, Rob saying that he'll marry one of the Frey girls to cross the twins in season one, which is like, that felt like nothing at the time. And it turns out that's what gets him killed two seasons later. So the difference is we had a lot more time back then. I think we keep coming back to this.
But like,
efficiencies.
But I just don't want to use like the passive voice. The like, oh, there was more time. It's like Weiss and Benioff decided. You know? Sure.
Yeah.
It's their decision, and whoever else, like actors who wouldn't renew their contract or whatever. Like, it's not like the universe demanded or HBO demanded or whatever that we have only 13 episodes to finish this. It's like they decided. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it just wasn't enough time.
Well, I think, here's my theory. You want to hear my Weiss and Benioff theory? It's not fully cooked yet, but we got one more episode. But I think the working theory is that once they figured out, I think in between, what was it? When did Jon die? Season five? End of season five and season six? When they figured out that it wasn't, that they weren't going to be able, that they were going to have to finish the story, and George wasn't going to finish the story. I think what happened is they went hard on efficiency, and they distilled it down to what are the big things we need to hit and what can we do to make it as awesome, bro, as possible, because that's who they are. And this is what it has wrought, which is sort of a mixed bag.
Next question that might be a dumb question, but maybe not. What exactly did Tyrion have Davos smuggle and where?
Oh, that's like the whole getting once Jamie got Cersei out of King's Landing, Davos's smuggler friends or whatever were going to be ready with a boat to take him to.
Or he put the boat there.
Oh, so he was the dinghy.
Yeah. Put the dinghy there, I guess. I don't know.
I'm just very unclear because he's like, I'm not going to like this. I'm like, oh, they're going to have to get Jamie into King's Landing or Tyrion into the prison camp or Jamie from the prison camp to King's Landing, or just Tyrion that key. Like, I was very confused about why we spent time setting up what Davos was going to do for Davos not to do
anything. Give Davos a line in this episode.
Well, it's funny because
there was a lot of better times to give Dallas life. He was like, he could have just been like, oh shit, just like once in the battle.
We gotta get the fuck out of here.
Stop raping.
Something no, like it's funny because that does.
Actually, I would have stopped being just like in weird, like doubt if there would have been one shot of Davos yelling, stop raping. I'm sorry.
Well, no, because we just talked about the small decisions that come back to bite people later and how it can feel cheap if there's not room to breathe. But it's like, in my mind, it's like, oh shit, is that going to come back to haunt Davos in the next episode? Like, is this, Daenerys is going to be pissed when she finds out. But also it's such a weird little throwaway thing that it's like, why'd you do it otherwise? So now I'm worried for my guy.
And all the things that I watched the second time through, all my questions came from, like, is this important? Like, cause basically the episode was like moving along and like there was a lot of things that felt really purposeful, which is like my next question, which is like Arya and the Hound and they're dovetailing. One of our emailers or one of our listeners emailed us that the charred bodies that Arya sees at the end of the episode are very similar to like the bodies that Sandor sees to like sort of turn him off of killing like forever. There are all these echoes in this episode specifically. And if you look back through the season between these two characters, how much of that is going to play out in the source material, do you think? Or is this a book or is this a show fusing? Because if I remember correctly, Bookhound is still maybe hiding out as the Gravedigger, but not confirmed hiding out as the Gravedigger.
Cleganebowl is a fucking fan theory invention. It's not a book thing. And so, like, this idea, which is fine, like, this is where Neil and I are going to fight about Cleganebowl, maybe, but, like...
Wait. Answer the Arya Hound question first, because...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Cleganebowl is their excuse to, like, draw a tighter connection between Arya and the Hound, like... coming back together. And I mean, maybe in the books, Arya will look at the Hound as an example of a life driven by vengeance that she decides she doesn't want to pursue. I really liked that about this episode, actually. Like, that's the thing about Cleganebowl that I did like, the cut back and forth, which was all Miguel Sapochnik's idea between Arya and the Hound. I thought that was actually meaningful. So maybe they'll do that in the books. But yeah, as you say, in the books, the Hound is still possibly dead, but probably the Gravedigger. And I mean, like, that's the reason, the genesis of Cleganebowl, right? Is that, the Hound is maybe alive in the books as the Gravedigger, and the Mountain is maybe alive in the books, not alive, undead in the books as Sir Robert Strong. Like, that's not even confirmed in the books that the Mountain is Sir Robert Strong, though obviously it is. And he's like got a different head, right? Cause they cut off his head. So like, he's, what is it? Joffrey's head? I don't know. He's got a different head. So like, he's really, really undead. And so people are like, ooh, two Clegane brothers, both unexpectedly still alive and their identity obscured. And like the whole thing of Cleganebowl was that Sir Robert Strong was going to be Cersei's champion if she had to do like a trial by combat. And then the Hound was going to come back and somehow be the church's champion because of his association with like, you know, those monks or whatever. And I was just like, I mean, that was a huge stretch in logic, but that's the genesis of that fan theory. And then it was just like, so get hype or whatever that like people latch onto it. And like, that's, I don't mean to be like shitty about it. Like, that's fine. And that was like a fun thing that people were talking about. But for Weiss and Benioff to then in the behind the scenes be like, everyone's been wanting this matchup to happen. This is the matchup of the century and everyone is dying to see it. And it's super important. And we're going to spend 20 minutes of the episode on Cleganebowl. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And that off
they
the
probably
back,
watch UFC fights.
That off the, I know they do. I've seen them at fights. And that off the back of them saying we never listen to fans about what they want on the show, and I'm like, bullshit. Use the word Cleganebowl. That's a fan thing. So like,
no,
I
no,
know
they
you
did
do.
The Cleganebowl. That's a fan thing. I bet you know if you're gonna do it, make it awesome. That's what I always say. And it was kind of awesome, as far as I can tell.
I did not. Agree.
Okay, so on this
Michael Jackson popcorn thriller gif.
Godzilla gif, let them fight.
Well, no, I think I love the it's weird because I love the detailed execution of it. Like, there's stuff in the execution, like Cersei's moment where she's like, fuck, I gotta get out of here.
That's great. Super great.
Qyburn being very unceremoniously murdered by his own Frankenstein's monster creation. Great. The Mountain didn't have to play all the hits with how he was trying to kill his brother.
Oh yeah, the eye thing.
He did the eye gouge. He threw people. I loved Rory McCann's performance in this. Loved the just great brutality of it. I wasn't, the prosthetics are, you know, okay. I thought some of the digital stuff was weird. That first shot's awesome, but some of the digital stuff gets a little weird. And also they foreshadowed, and this, I tried to piece this together with the behind the scenes, like this had to be very hard, was like the moment where they dive through the wall. But like the shot before that where there's like light coming through the little slits in the wall looks so weirdly fake to me. So it's an imperfect thing. I think it's, you know, I don't know. It wasn't hard for me to get mad when Weiss and Benioff, or it was harder for me to get mad at like Weiss and Benioff doing their cameo as wildlings in the literally the last episode.
Yeah.
Because, you know, when we think about it, they are still very responsible for what Game of Thrones has become. Yeah. I mean, they were the ones that George trusted. And I think this is part of the problem, which is they felt that it was incumbent upon them to finish it because they were the ones that George trusted with it, when in the end, the right answer may have been they should have handed it off for a couple, you know, to finish a few seasons. Who knows? So I'm not mad at them for putting it in or for doing stuff that's like for them or for the fans. So I liked it. It's silly. I don't think it relates to the books. I think I liked the way it closes the Hound's arc, like just the whole sequence where he gets that sort of Theon moment with Arya where she's like, thank you, you know, in her own way.
But like,
you're a good man.
But shouldn't that have been, at the Battle of Winterfell? Like, shouldn't he have done that to save Arya?
Maybe.
Like Theon did for Bran? Like, because this whole thing is like, I feel like it's Superman, like I don't feel like the Hound has been like, I'm gonna kill my brother, I'm gonna kill my brother, I'm gonna kill my brother. He said it once in last season, and last season was just the prequel to this season. Like, there's so much stuff in last season where they're like, we're gonna drop this seat, like Olenna being like, you and Cersei will be the end of each other. Like, there's just so many things that are just sort of like, well, they said they were gonna do it in season 7, so it's super satisfying that it's paying off in season 8. And I'm like, no, that's a two-part, no. But that was not the Hound's thing. Like, Oberyn's thing ever since he got to King's Landing was, I'm gonna get the Mountain. That's right. My thing. I want to do that. He was on a mission of vengeance, and that makes sense to me. But like, the Hound was just like, I'm sad and bummed that my brother did this to me. He wasn't like, one day, mark my words, I will kill my brother. That is something that the showrunners just airdropped on him in season 7.
Yeah.
So, like, you know what my head canon is to make that better? Is that Sandor saw him killing his brother
in the flames.
And well, that's why he got his face pressed down in there.
Yeah.
And so the whole time he's just like, please don't let there be a Lord of Light. Please don't let there be religion.
Please don't let
please
me
keep
have a
me
destiny.
Away from yeah, it's just like, I'm just this like horrible killer who kills things.
And I don't want to be a paternal figure seasons. For this small murder it's, child.
Exactly. But much like the other man in her life, Jon Snow, I apparently cannot die until I do these things.
What do you think, Varys heard in the flames? the sorcerer threw your pots on the flames. what did he hear? What the fuck is Kinvara talking about? What is Varys talking about? What did he hear in the flames? Did he hear Dracarys? Like, what did he hear? Like, whatever it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I think it's
something
gotta be Daenerys saying Dracarys.
It's something that George had an idea of. And Weiss and Benioff are like, we don't know.
We're not going to come back to that.
Thread dropped. It's fine. Yeah, I don't know. I think I'm just probably being a bit of a stick in the mud about the Clegane Bowl, because I know people are just like, it's okay. It's fun. Come on. But like, I really probably should stop watching the behind the scenes, but I'm not going to watch it. But when every time they're like, it was so sick on that staircase, bro, it's post-apocalyptic. Oh, it's so post-apocalyptic. I'm like, I don't want it.
I will.
You've just seen Reign of Fire too recently.
That's true.
The heights that it could have been.
I will say this. I mean, without them manufacturing the Clegane Bowl, we don't get, there's a lot of stuff that we probably don't get that I really liked, which, you know, up to that last moment with Arya, where he has that moment where he is the reason why she's like, oh shit, you're right. I'm super young. I gotta go. you know, and I've enjoyed having the Hound around. I think that it's kind of funny. Like they do this thing, the writer's room, the showrunners, where they like keeping characters around, and that has been, that has gone very poorly in the past. Like, that's how we got Ollie shooting Ygritte. Because they were like, oh, we just, I don't know, we like this thing. Let's keep this guy around. So if Clegane Bowl being sort of a mixed bag is the price we paid to keep Rory McCann on Game of Thrones for 8 seasons, I'm okay with that.
Okay, once you put it that way. The last thing I'll say about the behind the scenes of Clegane Bowl is if you watch it, you watch, like, Hap for Burnison, who like won the strongest man competition last year,
just
whatever,
throwing him around,
throwing actual Rory McCann, who like fucked up his knee beyond repair like last season when he filmed Game of Thrones, and this season he's like, okay, he's just gonna throw me into a wall over and over again. I think they said it was like a 12-hour day of him just being thrown into walls, and there's this one take, right, I know Neil, you watched it, where it's like Rory McCann's just like bent,
he's like,
over,
looks like he's gonna throw up.
Yeah, he looks like he's gonna vomit everywhere. So like, no shade on Rory's fucking great.
He rules.
He's the best. Did you see that interview he gave Hibbard where Hibbard asked him, like, what are you going to do now Game of Thrones is over? He's like, you know, I have a boat, so I'm just going to get on my boat and sail around. Hibbard's like, where are you going to go? And he goes, none of your fucking business.
See, it was all worth it.
Okay.
All right. One more thing we have to cover before we get to the Lannisters and then the final storm. True or false statement. Euron Greyjoy is among the top 5 most successful contenders for Game of Thrones as the man who killed Jaime Lannister.
And Joanna? Rhaegal.
And Rhaegal.
I'm going to give it to, this is, once again, I've just, the memes have been keeping me alive, so I've been like really into the memes this season, as a lot of people have. So I'll shout out to this meme I saw where it said the number one killer of Lannisters is gravity, because Tommen and Jaime and Cersei all died, I guess, because of gravity. So shout out to gravity and its impact on House Lannister.
I think my favorite tweet or meme this week was about Euron, where it was like, Euron Greyjoy succeeding at all times in being the guy who makes Game of Thrones fans go, oh man, this fucking guy again.
Basically, right up until the end, I was like, that was my response when he showed up to fight Jaime. I'm like, oh,
I groaned very hard at the I'm the man who killed Jaime Lannister joke, or that his like last line where it's like, oh, are you kidding me? What a dick. But then again, that's Euron. He was very Euron the whole time.
That's true. I really hope that, you know, it works out much more I want to say horny, but horn-based in the books. Right.
I just hope he's not still somehow alive on the show. Like, I don't want him to come back next week.
That fucker's dead. Okay, I have a question for you.
Okay.
I've been very staunchly just muting bad fan theories as they come at me on Twitter. But it's not prevented me from seeing some bad fan theories. Last week, the corker was like, there are secret dragon eggs and secret dragons. And what do you think these things flying behind Daenerys are? And what is Euron looking at? And the things flying behind Daenerys were birds, and Euron was looking at Drogon. That's what we said the whole time. So God damn it. Okay. That being said, what is the worst fan theory you've heard about, the Bells?
Well. There's one really bad one that I almost came up with, and I think I stopped myself. I may have even said it on the podcast yesterday, but I think we may have talked about it as we were preparing. But I've spent a lot of time this year being very angry not angry, just sort of policing my life of pregnancy theories. And then my mind, and I think this is something that a lot of people do with Game of Thrones.
Wait, yeah. Neil, that's what I appreciate about you.
Thank you. I think one of the things that we were conditioned for so many years that every little detail matters, everything is a ruse, or like everything could be a throw, you know, one way or the other, and everything just is like all these little details, and you start to construct these things. So my mind started to construct the what if Cersei is lying about her pregnancy thing. And I feel like I've been very close to like having it. And every time I'm like, stop it. This is bad. Don't do this. This is dumb. And I almost did it again this week. And, I'm glad that someone stopped me. I'm glad someone was there to stop me. Otherwise I would have really Daenerys'd it.
Yeah, I don't know if I have a good answer, but on top of that,
is Daenerysing it the new Britta? You really Britted that?
I really Daenerysed it. I really would have just that. Burned down all the goodwill that I had made in the last couple months.
There was a time in the dragon crypt scene or whatever when Cersei was crying about how she didn't want to die, and before she started saying that she wants her child to live, I'm like, don't say the child was fake.
Yeah.
Because the episode looked like it could have gone in that direction just as easily at that point. So I feel like that's a good pivot point to the end of our Lannister twins.
Wait.
Their exit from the show.
Where's the fan theory, Dave? Where's the fan theory that you're
That I heard about the bells.
The episode, the bells, not the literal bells.
Yeah. Daenerys' change on the ramparts makes sense.
That's the worst fan theory you've heard.
No, Bran.
I'm sorry. I'm really trying not to be mad at this episode.
Yeah,
that's
Bran.
The worst fan theory.
Bran works. I thought,
I actually do have a Bran fed one, which is that we very purposefully cut away from that last scene in the Godswood because this is Bran and Sansa's plan. All of this exactly, and that that Arya is even still part of that. And she's going to ride that white horse right up the steps of the Red Keep and do a frontal assault on Daenerys.
Bran is the horse. I thought Bran is the horse, which was a really popular thing.
That's very Twin Peaks.
Yeah, which I saw immediately after the episode. Bran is the horse. I thought it was going to be the worst take I saw. And then I saw this other one, which is, okay, we don't see Daenerys after she like makes that decision, right? We just see Drogon flying around. They're like,
oh, so Bran
warred into Drogon, and Daenerys is just like a hapless victim on the back of a dragon.
bad Drogon.
Stop. No, I'm a good person. Stop. What's the opposite of Jacaerys? I don't know.
I will say this awful, episode bad. Did finally rid me of my skepticism over the Bran being able to see the future thing, because they did insert that shot of Drogon flying over, which is exactly from his vision.
Finally, vindication.
And I was like, God, man. Well, now, I mean, it makes me mad because now it's like, well, he could have seen the future the whole time.
Sansa, smartest person in the world, has this kid who can see the future and the world's best assassin and her sister, and is like using none of it, as far as I can tell.
Or unless she's using
that fan
all
theory
of it.
Is true. Exactly.
I mean,
epilogue is like M. Night Shyamalan like flashback over, you know, Sansa's 4-season plan.
I have something
to get right here.
I have something to say about that in the storm. So,
yeah.
Oh, ooh.
I want to talk about another vision in the storm too.
All right. We'll get to the storm fast. I just want to give moments for our Lannister twins because they're great performances, and now we won't get to talk about them anymore. I don't know what else to add to that.
It's true.
I don't. Lena Headey's done her great work. Maybe not her best work this season, but I am very surprised how satisfying it was. Considering it wasn't telecast, or I don't know. There were times that I was doubting that this was going to happen the way that it was going to happen, even though it felt like it should have happened the exact way it did when it happens. Specifically, Jamie goes north to like fight with the dead. Like, knowing what I know now, that all seems extraneous, even though I liked it while it was happening. It's all like a mystery of storytelling, but at least these two actors have managed to make something of an arc out of it that I really appreciated.
Yeah, I like the end of it. I
loved the Jamie Cersei stuff.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as Jamie shows up, I think it kicks into gear. It's like, okay, well, this is the end for them. Wanted a little more fight out of Cersei, like in the sense that like it's weird, and this kind of dovetails back to the what could have set Daenerys off, but like I don't understand what Cersei's plan was. It was pretty bad. Like, all the Lannister plans were very bad in this episode. And then there's just, I just kind of wanted more for her to do as an actor. And it makes me question, now it makes me question, like, was how important really was Cersei to this whole thing. But when they finally get down into the dragon room, the skull room, and it's ending, it just comes pouring out of both of them, and great. So, but I wanted a little more from, like, what? I don't know. Cersei could have been a more active participant in the downfall of Daenerys.
It's kind of also have a waste to have the only showdown between those two characters be like from CGI generated ramparts or last season in the dragon pit, which is really the only time we got to see them spar off each other in a way that wasn't, in a way that was Game of Thrones. Like, they're both good at doing that. I would have loved to see them go queen versus queen.
Yeah, like, why,
politics matter.
Why wasn't there a scene where Daenerys, like, flies up to the Red Keep and, like, lands there and they, like, talk? I just wanted them
right.
to talk.
Or she just makes a pass at killing Cersei, or why isn't there a moment where they understand they could, like, see each other across the battlefield and it's Cersei? Yeah, I don't know. It seemed odd how Cersei was used in the battle, mostly because what her backup plan was to just go to the holds, like every siege of King's Landing ever, I would assume. That's the backup plan. So, like, she had her only specialty plans for the Dragon Queen were giant crossbows. Everything else was just the same old
And
King's
as we
Landing
learned
plan.
From one of the great philosophers of Westeros, Mr. Yoren, so what I hate about crossbows, they take too much time to load. Giant crossbows, even harder.
And even longer, and they don't pivot very well.
Exactly.
It's all horrible.
They only work if you catch someone by surprise because they forgot your fleet existed.
Right. Otherwise, they didn't have any scouts in their giant army.
Oh my god, remember scouts on this show?
Okay. Or someone who could touch a tree and know what's going on the other side of the country immediately.
You could see the future, by the way. I argued about this a lot on Cast of Kings, so maybe people are already like tired of me saying this, but I think that the way in which this delivers on the Valonqar prophecy is so fucking clever. I really love it. I it's something that I've been like wondering if this is how they were going to do it. Cause I like I said, emotionally, I did not want to watch. I mean, it's not like I've been predicting this for a really long time. You all know, if you listen to this podcast, if you listen to the storms, I definitely thought for a long time Jamie was dying at the Battle of Winterfell. I definitely thought that was happening. Didn't happen. I think they filmed it just to fuck with us. Great job, guys. You got me. But once it was clear that Jaime was going to Winterfell, I was like, going to King's Landing, I was like, I don't want to watch Jaime Lannister kill Cersei Lannister. I don't want to watch it. I don't want it. It's not, I don't understand how people think that that is a satisfying conclusion to his quote unquote redemption arc. I was like, how is that something a good man does? But him being the cause of her death, his hands still being wrapped around her throat, her still drowning in her tears anyway. I feel so immensely enormously
getting a mouthful
satisfied.
Of dust courtesy of Tyrion.
Yeah, choking, you know, like I just feel and dying. I feel so enormously satisfied by that. And it ticks something in my brain in the same way, like, you know, the Macbeth prophecies do. You know, prophecies, as George R. R. Martin said, are always tricky. Like, there's always something else hiding there. And, like, the fact that this is it.
It could have been Neville Longbottom if he didn't mock it as his equal.
I still don't really understand the end of that Harry Potter prophecy. It still is gibberish to me in a way that, like, other people claim it makes sense. Neither may
you see all the Jewish wizards were just right off to the left.
Neither may live while the other die. I don't know what that means. But yeah, but like Tyrion says, prophecy is like a half-trained mule. It looks as though it might be useful, but the moment you trust in it, it kicks you in the head. George R. R. Martin says prophecy can be a tricky business. One of my favorite Macbeth prophecies is when the witches say to Macbeth, it's like, you know, no man born of woman is the most famous Macbeth prophecy, but my favorite one is when it's like, and it's a Hamilton lyric, until Birnam Wood, you know, marches to Dulcinea, which is the castle where he is, right? And so it's like, you'll be fine, Macbeth, you know, you'll be fine until Birnam Wood, you know, like an entire forest moves itself over to this castle. And Macbeth's like, well, cool, that's never gonna happen, so I'm fine. And then they cut down the timber of Birnam Wood and use it as like, you know, as part of their war effort to batter at Dulcinea. And so like, that's how Birnam Wood gets to Dulcinea. And so it's just sort of like, that's what prophecies are. They're tricksy. That's what
they're
they
super
do.
Vague.
They trick you. One last
they're hard to figure out for a reason.
One last George R. Martin quote. Prophecies are, you know, a double-edged sword. You have to handle them very carefully. They can add depth and interest to a book, but you don't want them to be too literal or too easy. So, you know, I feel like this Valonqar thing is fucking fantastic, and a lot of people are really mad about it, and that's fine.
Yeah, I think it works.
Yeah, I think I'm with Dave of Castle Kings, and I didn't see it, and it doesn't work for me. But I'm happy it's there for you, because the scene works for me, so if everybody's enjoying it at the maximum possible level, who am I to voice non-existent concerns? No one. All right, guys, anything before we move into the storm? The final storm.
Come with us. Come with us. You'll be happier if you do. Come join us in the final storm. Come on. Yeah. You know you want to.
All right. Let's cut then to our final usage of the man who killed Jaime Lannister.
All right. So before we enter the final storm of Game of Thrones, let's stop and take a quick inventory of people we'd like to thank. These folks. Small council members on our Patreon, patreon.com/stormofspoilers. They also get a fun, exclusive mailbag. So if you'd like to join their ranks, it's very useful. Anyway, this week, I'd like to thank Hannah, with no last name, Christopher Ryan Kellison, Arthur Winnie, Victoria Miniatures. That's interesting the way that's written. Derek Finnemore, Kenneth Smith II, Will Neville, Justin Peterson, Kimberly Lanning, Tone Kristen Langonet, awesome, Kelsey, Alex Friedman, Jess Kearson, Skip, this is a good one, Booganig, close.
Buttigieg?
Buttigieg? Buttigieg? Anyway.
I know Skip.
Okay, Skip, great. Monica Bloom, Regina Ripley, Michael Caswell, James Barta, Michael Crown, and Austin Abessinio.
This is my turn. I'm going to thank Kathy Jones, Norman Thompson, Erica Bechtel, Rebecca Tyneman, Kelly Ochoa, Zim Contrera, Sandra D. York, Amin, Kat Stromberger Perez, Gina Gatto, Tatiana V, Lori Carmichael Howell, Mike Ishman, David McGilvery, TK Fancyfur, Melissa Schwer, Inigo Soriano, Del Nakamura, and Caroline of the North. Thank you guys so much.
And I'd like to add to our mutual thanks, Kristen, Mark Harper, Agnes Millen, Stacy Henn, Priscilla Walton, JJ, Brianna Gregio Schmidt, Jenna Paul, Amy, Jackie Palowalski, David Matheson, Andrew, Rachel Lipson, Stephanie Jenner, Claire Smith, Kaylee Hicks, Frederick Budolf, Shane Yap, David Adams, and C.S. Mysterious. Thank you very much for being part of the Small Council.
It's a big episode for people who like it when we butcher their names.
Oh, yeah. Big episode for name butchering. Every episode is a big butchering for name butchering on Storm of Spoilers.
I am the storm, brother. The first storm and the last. And you're in my way.
All right, we're in the storm. Joanna said something interesting. What you could, it's a, now's always time to talk about her and all. Do we want to talk about why she didn't melt the Red Keep? Is that the question?
Right. Well, this is something that I felt dumb because Dave Chen raises on Cast of Kings and like I should have had my book reader knowledge ready with this take or whatever. But he was like, isn't there something weird about the fact that Drogon's Dragonfire can just sort of like blast through everything like a demolition thing? And wasn't the whole thing with Harrenhal that it's like melty on top because not because like the dragons attacked it and it just sort of like blew to bits and pieces like the Red Keep did on this episode, but like it would have melted the stone just a bit, you know, it would have made it look like weird and melty. And I think that that's a that's true. That's all.
Yeah, I think it's possible that Dragonfire works a little differently in the world of the books. I mean, we really don't know yet. I've seen this people asking this question on Twitter, and it brings me back to what they talked about when I watched the behind the scenes of the Field of Fire battle. That's what we're calling it, right? In season
Correct.
7, where they talked about
it's the name of that battle.
They talked about wanting to make the dragon fire look more like look propulsive, like it was creating force, so that they could have it explode when it hit the ground. So that might actually, be a show invented thing. So yeah, don't worry so much about Harrenhal in the show context.
I think it
would have been cool to see.
Yeah, that's be my message to anyone who's really racking their brain and losing sleep over it.
Guess what? Of all the things I'm hung up on this episode, the destructive power of Dragonfire is
Can Dragonfire melt steel beams is your question?
That's the joke I made on Cast of Kings. You can't take my joke and say it again.
I only got far enough through Cast of Kings to hear Dave say that he didn't believe the Valancor thinks of choking, but then I had to like actually rewatch the episode, so I'm sorry. The steel beams joke has been all the way around the Joanna circuit. And come back into the barn here at Storm Spoilers. All right. How do we want to start this off? You guys made some references to stuff you want to talk about. Otherwise, we're going to start with who kills Daenerys.
Which I wrote in the show notes in all caps. Okay. Yeah. Here's the deal. Okay. So, like, the thing we thought we knew coming into the season was that, like, Tyrion was going to burn King's Landing. That didn't happen. And then was going to be put on trial and executed for it. And there's some other things that we think we know, you know, and so like, is Tyrion still like, what I think we know from the leaks is that Daenerys is going to imprison Tyrion in this week's episode. I think there's also allegedly a time jump because apparently Dinklage filmed some stuff with like scraggly hair, like he had been in prison for a while. So there's perhaps a time jump in the coda of like, let's let Tyrion out of prison, blah, blah, blah. But there's two, well, I am confident they filmed multiple endings. But this idea of a meeting in the dragon pit that takes place without Jon and Daenerys. So like Daenerys is already dead and Jon is already like sort of self-exiled to the north.
He's moving into his apartment with Tormund.
Yeah, volunteered to take the black or range north or whatever it is he's going to do, right? So like Jon's gone, Daenerys is dead. You know, who's left to rule King Bran and whatever. So the question is the group assembled in the dragon pit at the end, which could potentially be King Bran, which is like, Jesus Christ. And then Sansa representing
Prime Minister Bran.
PM Bran and like the United or the Parliament of Westeros, which is like that aforementioned Dornish prince and Sansa and stuff like that. Okay, Sansa. So is like all that going to happen? or and the assembled thing is the election of King Bran, or is the thing actually a trial of Tyrion and Sansa turns on him and executes him? That's a possible leak. Like, it's possible that that happens, that all of this goes through. Sansa gets what she wants, which is an independent North, and then also her brother's on the frickin' throne. Like, Sansa stays in Winterfell because there must always be a Stark in Winterfell. So she's in Winterfell. Bran is the king. Tyrion helped engineer a lot of this, helped make this happen, and Sansa turns on him anyway and executes him. I could definitely see that happening. It's gonna be a further bad news bears for, like, women in power, throughout this whole thing. But then there's the possible Scooby-Doo happy ending or whatever, where it's like, King Bran and his, and Tyrion Hand and his council of, like, Davos and Sam and some other people. And that could happen too. That would put more sweet in the bittersweet of Daenerys dying.
How is that a Scooby-Doo?
No, it's not. I was trying to do a Wayne's World thing, and I...
Oh, I was waiting for, like, they cut off his head, and Arya's made dress somebody up in Tyrion's face.
I fucked up that reference. Whatever the Wayne's World ending that would be, like, as sort of, like, happy with whatever parts we have left. So, like, is the council an election of King Bran, or is the council... in the Dragon Pit, the execution of Tyrion Lannister. Is it both? I don't know. I kind of want Tyrion to die. Not because he necessarily did anything to deserve it, but just because, like, I got really attached to that idea of the death of House Lannister and stuff like that. And the idea of, like, Sansa having one more trick up her sleeve, et cetera.
Is there room for one more crazy town theory here?
Oh, always, bud. Bring it to me.
What if he kills Daenerys?
What I think is true, well, what if Tyrion kills Daenerys?
Yeah.
What I think is true is that, and Sansa has him executed as the Kingslayer.
Mm-hmm.
What I think,
or Jon has him executed, or Jon sentenced him to die before he fucks off north.
What I think is true is that, they filmed almost, you know that, you know when they were doing The Walking Dead? And they filmed,
they filmed like 12 different deaths.
Every single brains, person. Yeah. Like, yeah, I think they filmed every single person killing Daenerys. I think they filmed every single version of that scene in this, like, locked room.
Imagine Amelia
set.
Clark having to go through being killed by every one of her friends.
No wonder she was fucking journaling. You know what I mean? And so, like, so that's why I'm uncertain. And we've talked about this in the storm before, but I'm uncertain. I believe it happens in the throne room. I believe it has something to do, one of the leaks says it has something to do with her touching the throne. And if you go back and watch that vision from season two, there's this section where she walks up and she, like, reaches out to touch the throne and then is distracted by the sound of her crying dragon babies and also the vision of Khal Drogo. But, like, something to do with touching the throne, I think, is involved. But is it Arya who kills her, as the Jon Snow, as the Lightbringer? Cause we're getting some Nisa shit. It's really bothering me, but, like, we are. So, like, does Jon Snow kill her, or does Arya kill her? But I think that those are the likely two outcomes, you know, cause there's also this leak where it's like Jon finally sees Arya in the throne room. So I think she's there. Whether or not she's...
Well, and you can kind of see it in the next week on it, which shows very little, but you can tell that Tyrion, Jon and Davos and Arya are three separate parties witnessing what's happening post battle with Daenerys.
Mm.
So, it's interesting that you brought up the season two vision, Daenerys's vision in the House of the Undying, because I want to talk about that one as well.
Oh, I'm so mad. Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, it does feel like if we take that vision literally, what happens in that vision? She gets to the throne room. It's destroyed. Snow is on the throne. And then she leaves to go to the afterlife with Drogo and her baby.
Yeah.
Like, that's how the vision goes. And that feels like it's going to line up, you know, in, obviously it's, you know, it's the whole idea of a hollow victory where it's like she wins and, you know, the throne is liberated from the clutches of the usurpers, but she doesn't get to enjoy it. And, you know, it's very sad. It's very bittersweet, for sure.
What's frustrating to me is that In the, you know, Kim and I did this thing where we like deep dive into the scripts, that are at the Writers Guild, in Los Angeles. And one of the things that we like quote unquote discovered on the script was to settle the debate. Is that Ash on the throne or is that Snow on the throne? And in the script, it says, it's Snow. In the script, it says it's Snow. In the script, it says it's Snow. James Hibbard today or yesterday, whatever, tweeted out like, you know, that vision of Daenerys and the throne room, the snow, blah, blah, that's Ash. And I'm like,
nope.
If it is, it's a, it's a retcon, and that bothered, I hate a retcon. I really hate a retcon. You know what I mean? But like, you know, if Hibbard tweets it, I'm sure it's what is currently true because Hibbard like has access. So he like knows things. He's not just like wildly guessing. He's like someone has told him something and that means they.
Yeah. Kermit the Frog knows exactly what Jim Henson was thinking.
Let's just dial it down. but like, you know, if it's Ash now and not Snow, it's something that they changed. And that really bums me out because I hate a like retcon. I really do. Anyway, it's sort of like how they changed the Melisandre, like, they changed the Melisandre prophecy of like, you will close green eyes and brown and blue. They like changed the order of it to make it more match the Night King. Cause I am 1000% certain that was not their plan when they originally wrote that thing. They're just like, ooh, we'll make it fit. You know what I mean? So anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, wait, doesn't Daenerys have green eyes? And we figured that out last week in the storm.
Yeah. Emilia Clarke has green eyes and Lena Headey has green eyes. So.
I was going to say there wasn't a lot of evidence that it was going to be Arya, but now maybe I'm thinking it's going to be Arya.
Also, I'm just going to say this. If I were wanted to throw people off of one of the most popular theories, maybe I would say it's Ash too. I'm just saying. I'm just saying there have been as many fake spoilers as there have been real spoilers, and there's been a wide dynamic range of participation in the media. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Oh, remember when we, you know, got some photos of Cersei and Jon Snow meeting
right.
on like
Jon bends the knee to Cersei.
That's different. That's,
is it?
That's them trying to fool fucking drones, and they did it. Good job. You know, I want to say I'm right. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe check the tape. I think I was never fooled by those. Because it's not just like Kit Harington and Lena were in front of the window. It was like Weiss and Benioff were there too, like being like, oh yes, and now do this. And like this very, it looked so staged to me. But, you know.
I'm just saying, if they're willing to do that to mess with drones, what are they willing to do to mess with smart people?
The fans they don't listen to.
Gamble. But yeah, anyway, I think that they did do that whole Negan baseball bat thing and like filmed every single person stabbing Daenerys one way or another. But the leaks we know, in case you're new to the storm, the leaks we feel like we know is that Daenerys dies, Jon Snow probably kills her, and then, you know, crying because he's so sad because he really loves her, as we definitely tell by their chemistry.
He really loves the idea of her more than he loves like actually being around her.
I would have kissed you if I knew it was genocide or incest.
It's all because Jon Snow couldn't truly love his own aunt.
Mm-hmm.
I really hate that.
I know. Oh, it's so bad.
Anyway,
no, it's just Jon's dumb. He's just dumb. It's okay.
Anyway, he's gonna go north, right? Live. That's what we still
something
think.
Something that live free. I feel comfortable saying this in the storm. Something that I talked to a journalist who works for a major publication. He talked to a VFX guy who told him that there would be extensive patting and petting of a direwolf in this season.
Oh my god! We finally shamed the VFX people into breaking. You gotta wonder how long that takes for like, cause like, yeah, somewhere in there, somewhere on a computer somewhere, there either is or isn't a whole bunch of shots of Jon petting ghosts. And if you have those on your computer, it must be excruciating for all the very accurate ghost memes. But yeah, I mean, that sounds like good news to me. That's as good as Robin Aaron news.
Extensive patting and petting. Yeah, and we believe at the Dragon Pit, Robin Aaron will be there. Edmure Tully will be there.
Get those Fantasy League points.
Dorne will be there. someone from the Reach, a new person from the Reach will be there. I just really don't think that I could handle a council where Bronn is, like, that was one link, and I was like, no, I can't handle Bronn being, like, one of the rulers of the Seven Kingdom going forward. Just pure Weiss and Benioff, and I hate it.
Bronn is not totally wrong about the whole cutthroats thing, inventing houses, but also it feels sort of unearned for Bronn to get the castle after all the Lannisters die.
Well, yeah, which castle does he get?
Yeah,
by whose authority
does
he claim a
castle? Who the hell is giving
Bronn
a castle at this point?
not old in jail Tyrion.
I'm curious to see what happens with Bronn. Like,
is it possible the long-haired Tyrion stuff was just him in Infinity War and we got it all screwed up?
No. Tree!
Tree!
Peter Dinklage, the bravest accent haver of all time.
The handle. All right, let me read this recap of the leaks just to make sure we all have all the information. Okay. Jon Snow finally sees Arya after they reach the Iron Throne in King's Landing. I think this means that he hasn't seen her since she left Winterfell ahead of him. Danny mm-hmm. starts executing everyone in King's Landing. Tyrion and Jon are upset. Danny has Tyrion arrested for freeing his brother. His trial is supposed to have neither Danny or Jon present. Tyrion tries to convince Jon to turn on Danny. His family will never be safe because it threatens Danny's legitimacy. Jon is horrified by what Danny has done to King's Landing, and she gives speeches about how she'll keep doing it to free slaves from their chains. He's also convinced by Tyrion that his family will never be safe because he presents a threat to her rule. Jon tries to talk to Danny, but she ignores him, thinking she's justified. Jon pledges himself to Danny, then stabs her and surrenders himself. Very traumatic for Jon because he does love her. Drogon should melt the Iron Throne after her death. And then here is a major divide with the links. Is it a King's Council or a trial with Tyrion's death or both? Right now, King's Council appears to be true. A council is formed to decide who the king should be. Tyrion gives a speech and everyone votes on Bran to become the king. The end. In the epilogue, Jon takes the black again for killing Dany. I think this is penance for regicide and guilt. People take the black to avoid the death penalty, and he would be the 1,000th Lord Commander of the Night's Watch. Arya leaves. She told Clegane she would. Sansa rules the North. When they're deciding who to elect as king, Sam suggests holding a democratic election, and the other nobles laughed at him. That's before they vote on Bran. Bran oversees his council of Tyrion, Davos, Sam, and Bronn. Like, fuck me with a chainsaw if it's Bronn. The fucking council. The Unsullied leave to cross the sea and start liberating slave cities on their own because that's Dany's plan before Jon kills her. She has this big speech scene after sacking King's Landing where she's talking about wrecking the world, liberating all the slaves from their masters. Okay, that was ending one, King's Council. Ending two, Tyrion's trial. Tyrion's trial in the Dragon Pit is a major scene. It has no Jon, Dany, or dragons. Ser Davos is present, not wearing the Hand of the King pin, along with all three Stark children, Samwell, Tarly, Brienne, Robin Arryn, Grey Worm, and an unknown man wearing golden clothes, likely Dornish, and another unidentified man. An older, short-bearded one dressed in green will be there as well. Bran will flash back to season one, where Tyrion Lannister told Catelyn Stark, "I never bet against my family." Tyrion is filled with this doesn't make sense, to be honest with you. Tyrion is filled with anger and resentment against the people of King's Landing because he saved them against Stannis and they still turn on him. Thinks people of King's Landing deserved it. He saved them and were grateful, and they weren't grateful. Trial of Joffrey's murder will fall to his knees in the middle of the speech, dragged down by the weight of his actions. His death was filmed in studio, so not sure how he dies. I mean, that just, like, that execution of Tyrion doesn't make sense to me. Sansa, like, turning on Tyrion, like, using Tyrion and then saying, like, you betrayed your queen or you did something or whatever, so you don't get to live in my new Westeros. That seems like the only way I could see Tyrion dying. And then here's the last thing, both endings combined. King's Council seems most likely as multiple scenes can be cheaply shot. However, few will have graphic effects or sound added. Fricky's leaks were from the 7 months ago when they were filming. Fricky is doubling down that it is a trial. And because Tyrion's death isn't filmed, it may be both. Tyrion will have a trial, give a speech, and ultimately be spared and raised to the King's Council. On the other hand, if he is killed, it doesn't change the ending too much, so it should be interesting. So, does Tyrion make it out alive or not is still a question mark that I, Joanna Robinson, have. But Daenerys dies, Jon is in exile. Everyone else is in, like, some phase. Arya goes wandering. Everyone else is in some phase of rule. Seems right to me.
I'm going to tell you a couple things that would make me mad. about those.
Bronn on the Small Council?
Mm. Bronn on the Small Council, not great. If the guy in green is Howlin' Reed, we riot. That's all I'm saying, because their sigil is fucking green. So, if Howlin' Reed shows up at the end and is like, by the way, the John thing is totally true.
My name is Howlin' Reed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm here to be on the Small Council. Yeah.
See, now this is what season 8 is sort of doing. It's like, now I'm like, what's the worst thing they could do to me?
how bad could this really be?
Lady Stoneheart shows up and kills Bronn in the next episode. It's up there too. But then again, that might also be kind of fun.
I think Tyrion does die. Yeah. That seems like the show. It seems like Bran's meaningful look at him in episode one, which made a lot of sense to us when we thought he was burning down King's Landing, but now is just sort of a mystery, especially knowing that Bran could see the future. So, yeah, I think Tyrion is the one that has character development to just like end in tragedy. And I would like to think that he doesn't go back to just doing his best, like running King's Landing, even though he likes it and he's good at it. That doesn't seem like an end to his arc.
Yeah.
Because he's been trying to be good, but failing since he got banished to Essos. But I don't think that's a character arc that's, gonna necessarily end up with him being good, because he does ultimately choose his family, over peaceful solutions several times.
I also do like
fucking him over feels like a good, like,
yeah,
moment for Sophie Turner to play.
Well, it's also similar to the moment that Tyrion has with Varys, where it's like, sorry, bud, but had to do it. I also do like, you know, I think we talked about this in the storm last week about, this being the end of the Lannister and Targaryens. And, there's a finality to that that I like, you know, the two houses that, you know, were, you know, huge players in the downfall of this country, being sort of snuffed out by the wars that ensued, makes a lot of sense. You know,
the two most
power hungry houses.
I'm gonna channel Kim Renfro through Dave Gonzalez. Are you ready?
Go.
A time for wolves. that was Martin's original plan for the name of the final book of his series, A Time for Wolves. And Kim has been like really banging the drums of like, she thinks that should be the name of the final episode. Do we want to do like a final guess for the, we actually know a few obvious things that it's not, that we thought it might be. We know it's not A Dream of Spring or A Song of Ice and Fire.
Oh, we know that?
I'm pretty sure it's not.
Oh. Song of Ice and Fire still sort of makes sense, but not totally. Especially after the bells. The bells really threw everything off. I was like, I feel like I know where they're going until the bells.
Yeah. I also felt...
Because it should have been Burn Them All or Dracarys or something.
Should have been. And then we were like, that was a whole theory as to why they were hiding the episode titles this whole time, was like, it's because the penultimate one is like foreshadows the fact that King's Landing is going to burn the fuck down. Nope.
I mean, it could be something like the prince who was promised, since they are almost certainly going to close that one, that prophecy up.
King Bran Stark, first of his name. no.
Nah, I'm really trying to think. Is there something that also brings it like full circle?
The Lord Commander.
And now his watch begins.
Or the White Wolf. Because John has been called the White Wolf a couple of times, and it's going to be about him going back with Ghost and living in exile. So maybe
a Targaryen, I mean, this, alone in the world.
Listen, I don't like it that it's John's story. It's less fun this way, but it is kind of John's story. Like, if we had to pick, like, the most central character to this story.
Well, something that when I was trying to go through, like, the book evidence of, like, Daenerys' downfall, not in a told just sort of way, but just sort of like, okay, yeah, George is definitely seating this in there. That's fine. I went through and I was counting point of view chapters to sort of see, like, okay, who is the protagonist of this story? And it, you know, it used to be a bit more even-handed. It's front-loaded with a lot of Tyrion stuff, but it's Jon. It's Jon, 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 Jon. You know, like that's mm-hmm. a person who has the most POV chapters. So
he is the literal manifestation of A Song of Ice and Fire. He was born of a Targaryen and a Stark, and he is the prince. He is the one who is going to bring balance to the universe. Yeah, and the bittersweet part is that he is going to have to do all the worst things that he never wanted to do in order to achieve what.
Except have sex with his aunt again.
Do you think the song about if Daenerys dies in flames, and
I still
think
it's,
she will, but if she does, and then Jon dies, and then Jon goes to the north, is A Song of Ice and Fire like he is exiled to ice and she ends in fire?
Yeah, well, I still think that The Song of Ice and Fire is about the two of them and about what they do with power, because they have different, obviously different viewpoints, especially by the end. They're the two characters that have risen from some of the lowest points. You know, he was a bastard. She was literally sold off in the first episode, and they rise to end this great existential threat together. They rise to break the wheel together. And the bittersweet part is that they're not going to be happy. Like, they don't get to be happy afterwards. Daenerys found that out this week. Jon is going to find it out next week. That there's just no happiness in this life for him. But, you know, they mattered. They both combined to liberate Westeros from tyranny, which also included a little bit of Daenerys too. You know, like, she was also kind of the tyrant.
I have an ice question in mm-hmm. terms of A Song of Ice and Fire. Where the fuck is Widow's Wail?
Hanging out with Heartsbane and Dorne.
Where the fuck is Widow's Wail? I guess my best idea of it is that when Jaime was arrested by
they took it away from
people,
him.
They took it away from him. So the Unsullied have Widow's Wail, I guess. I don't know. I just feel like these swords are so important and they're just being tossed aside. Jaime Lannister's running around King's Landing and grabs a random sword out of a random sword basket that he finds in the street in order to have a sword so he can fight Euron later. That sword basket was really a hot bummer.
Also, like, why are there extra swords in this particular time of battle? Isn't that the time you need all the swords?
Yeah.
Or is that why they're ready in the basket? Would you usually store them properly, but they're ready for defense sword basket?
There's just caches of wildfire and swords all over the city.
Just everywhere. Just like King's Landing sucks.
Yeah.
Have a sword basket. This was Cersei's campaign promise. A chicken in every pot and a sword in every basket.
Sword in every basket. Multiple swords. You want a sword? Take it. Okay. Yeah, I think I don't have a better guess than any of those for the final episode title. I would like Kim to be right now just because it would make her very happy.
Yeah, she deserves that. She works very hard. Okay, one other question. What is the last shot of Game of Thrones?
Well, if the Jon Snow thing is the epilogue, I think it's him and Ghost walking north. Like, I want it to be, what I really want it to be is them on top of the wall, sort of with similar lighting. But, like, how do you get Ghost up on top of the wall? This is weird. It's, like, not working in my mind as I say it. But, yeah, or, like, Jon watching the sunrise. in the north or something.
Oh, the dawn.
Him watching the dawn over the thawing north.
Hmm.
That'd be my guess.
Dave?
I like that. So I'm going to say if we get a time jump, then maybe like Niels is a good one. But I'm going to say it's Game of Thrones. So they're either going to do the cheesy thing we've been talking about the fucking book and the maesters thing.
Ugh.
And we go up and we're on the golden rings. Or I think I like the idea of like a sunrise or a sunset, but a shot that doesn't actually have like the main characters in it. And, like maybe just King's Landing or an empty throne room that has a pile of fucking melted metal at it or something, but something that we've actually gone beyond the Game of Thrones.
It's the sun rising over Storm's End.
That'd be great. Yes. Sun rising over Storm's End and Gendry's firing up the forge.
Could also be something Winterfell. I mean, Winterfell is it's weird that we didn't get any Winterfell in the last couple episodes, because they're rushing to the end. So maybe it's just a shot of Winterfell. They love doing those, like, pan shots now.
My original thought was that in the epilogue, it's Arya teaching Jon and Daenerys' baby, LOL, how to fire arrows in the courtyard of Winterfell. That was like my thought, but that was an old guess back when I thought Daenerys was gonna have a baby. My guess now, I have a hilarious joke guess and a real guess. My hilarious joke guess is Jon and Tormund on top of the wall in the same framing as Egret.
Making out?
Making the fuck out.
I'm okay with it.
Find you another ginger wildling, my friend.
The climb.
Yeah. While in the background, Dave is just reciting.
Only the ladder is real.
Peter Baelish's monologue about the climb. Anyway, that's my joke answer. My real answer is just John patting and petting the shit out of Ghost. You know, he's reunited with his true Starkish self. Blah, blah, fuck the Targaryen side of him. He's a Stark. You
or
know,
what
maybe,
if it's
maybe
okay.
I missed you, boy. Another I missed you, boy, from John to Ghost.
Okay, hear me out. If there's a time jump, maybe the epilogue is the time jump and it's like fast forward and John's much older, but we see it's like a couple minute scene where he's like milling around this cabin in the north and Ghost is there. He pets Ghost. They have like a conversation or something and they go outside and they see the sun coming up or something like that. Like one of those like, you know, I retired to the cabin and I've been here for a while scenes.
I took over Craster's Keep.
Oh. Or like John and Ghost ranging and they find the tree where the Night King was created or something.
I mean, I wouldn't mind when you were first talking about them, like, you know, at a fire or something and watching the sunrise over the thawing. What if he buried something back at the Fist of the First Men?
Sure.
Wait. Shouldn't this end where it always should have ended, which is at the Trident?
Trident got a shout out this week.
I know. I was so mad and so pleased in like the 10-second segment. I was like, oh, the Trident! And then I'm like, oh, he's just saying they're moving on. That's going to be it. We don't have enough time left in this series to go back to the Trident. Anyway.
Oh.
Yes, it should end. It should end at the Trident.
One other guess, and this is, I will throw myself off a cliff if this is what happens.
Bran wargs back into the Mad King.
Here's my fear. My fear is that Daenerys is going to die. Drogon is going to pick up her body and fly away, because that's like in the leaks, right? That Drogon flies off with her body.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That part that makes no sense, but is in the accurate leaks.
I am so worried that it will be shot in a way that some dummies will be like, Daenerys is still alive. It's really... what I'm terrified of, that we're gonna get theories about.
You're thinking that Valyrian steel kills White Walkers, but Targaryens actually
so like
have two hearts.
Yeah, her other heart is still beating. So my fear is that the final shot is Jon walking into the north with Ghost and then a dragon flapping overhead. And people are going to be like, what if she's still alive and then they go and be like,
they're together in the north.
King and queen. I mean, what's clear from this episode.
No, let's do it. Let's JFK assassination the entire ending of Game of Thrones.
What's clear is that Jon is never touching Daenerys again after this situation.
Yeah. I think the honeymoon is over.
It would be kind of fun to have like the dragon flapping overhead though, like even if it's super clear Daenerys is dead, because then he's Starkarian, you know, Jon Starkarian.
Right. Then those leaked sigils at the rap party make a whole lot more sense.
My God, what if they're just nothing?
They're not. They just made them for the rap party because they're like, what if someone takes a picture of the fucking rap party? Wouldn't that be hilarious?
Kill me.
Fuck those people. We've had really traumatic 6 weeks because we're working on this show, so why can't we have some fun?
Quick, just tell them it's Ash.
just
50
Hey, can you tweet something for me real quick?
50 nights shooting one battle episode that everyone in the world complained they couldn't see at all. Here's what I'll say this. As much as we give them shit, mazel tov to Weiss and Benioff. For having done what George couldn't, which is finish something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think this is a good place to wind down because this is where we started.
Enjoy.
This television, like Neil was saying, this television show has grown beyond what other television shows are even capable of. So the fact that we're watching this, like either from ending the narrative standpoint finally, or just from this level, both of execution and of budget and of everything of planning this television show, It's a giant mountain, and they're two guys. And like, we make fun of them a lot, but I don't think any of us think that they're maliciously out there trying to like hurt people's feelings. They want to finish their show. They did. That part of me is very happy for them.
Yeah. The only thing that I've ever thought that they have been malicious is in the way they pronounce character names in the behind the scenes. That feels intentional and mean.
Cersei.
Cersei. Misende.
Misende. Cersei.
All right, guys. Anything else for the last storm?
I'm so excited for the live show. I'm so genuinely thrilled that I get to watch the finale with the two of you. I could not.
It's going to be wild.
And
it's going to be a lot of emotions.
And then we all get to hang out with a bunch of our listeners on Monday night. I'm so stoked.
Yeah, they get to see that, but we're going to put a drone lockdown on our actual finale viewing because it might get ugly.
Oh, yeah.
No outside pictures.
Yeah, we don't want anybody thinking, you know, getting spoilers for the show.
Yeah, that would be weird and off-brand. all right. Where could people find your work until later this week when we talk about Lost? Let's start with Neil.
You get me over at filmschoolrejects.com. Get me on Twitter at rejects. And don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers and email us things that you want to tell us, stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And Miss Joanna Robinson.
You can find me on vanityfair.com. You follow me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This. You can hear me talking about Lost on this here podcast feed.
Ooh, yeah. We're so enthusiastic in this pivot, which is like, it came at the exact right time because, you know.
We're ready to be on to Lost.
Yeah. You ready for some more crazy theories? We'll just start Lost the exact same time we run out of Game of Thrones crazy theories. Perfect. I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You can find my writing at Thrillist.com and Polygon.com. You can find me on the other podcast, Fighting in the War Room. This week, we argued a little bit about Game of Thrones, if that's your safety flavor. We will see you guys in San Francisco next week. Oh, my God. Don't fall down. Oh, don't fall down, guys.